It's funny that a lot of people see us as a sort of Helvetica only act. Well, if you look at our website, you can see that we use quite a lot of other typefaces. Univer, Courier New, Franklin Gothic, Futura, just to name a few. But still, people always see us as some kind of Helvetica purist. So the first idea that we had for this lecture was to show all the work that we did without Helvetica, to sort of smash the whole image that people have of us. Because we did quite a lot of work without Helvetica. For example, this work that we did for the Stedelijk Museum CS, SMCS, in 2004, which was the temporary location of the Amsterdam Museum of Modern Art.
So. And this is just a small part of a much bigger project. And as you see here, we use the Univers, designed by Adrien Frutiger. And the reason we used the Univers was because we wanted to refer to the original graphic identity of the Stedelijk Museum, as used in the 60s and 70s. So in this case, it was more of a historical, conceptual reason for us to use this typeface. Maybe you can show some. Yeah.
Maybe this is also, it wasn't only referring to the original logo, but also to the airmail pattern. It's maybe a complicated story, but in short, the temporary location of the Stedelijk Museum was located in a former post office, and we wanted to refer to that. So that's why we introduced that sort of red and blue diagonal diagonale stripes, to sort of refer to the pattern that you always have on email envelopes.
So. Okay, so this is the post office. This is some posters we designed with the Univers for the building, temporary space, some in the streets of Amsterdam. And this is the sign system we developed. It's actually made of, I think, 1,000 plastic holders, A4 sized, so we can print them out ourselves and put them in there because it was a temporary building. We needed to design something that was really
sort of light and
also flexible, flexible and for low budget, because they told us that they did not have a lot of money to put in this temporary building. So we had this transparent sheets all over the place, printed out the A4s ourselves, put it in there, and so we could change all the title walls for every exhibition. And actually, we're quite happy with this, the thing we came up with. We use it for everything, not only for the title walls, but also for the sign system that was always there, so the toilets and stuff like that. It's this. And actually, this is like a staircase installation. They asked us to do a, well, it's quite an difficult.
Yeah, in short, it is when you enter the museum through the staircase, every time you hit a wall, you see another one of these combinations of
drag
words.
You.
To drag you upstairs in a way. And it always makes up the acronym SMCS. We made different combinations of words. So.
Another next example of a typeface we use is the Futura. This is the graphic identity we recently designed in 2007, using the Futura designed by Paul Renner. And we designed this logo based on three geometric forms, because it was called 104, Le 104. So it's the line, the circle, and the triangle forming together 104. And we use this typeface because it has the perfect circle. We need it. And also to refer to the early industrial location the institute was situated in. So in this case, we use the Futura for both formal and conceptual reasons. Yeah, maybe, well, Well, we started out with the line, the circle, and the triangle. In the end, the logo looked like this, because then the French needed to explain the rest of the story. So we needed to add not only 104, but we had to add a translation in French, le 104, to the logo. And then a few months later, they also asked us to add Établissement Artistique de la Ville de Paris. And this is the way we solved it. So in the end, the logo looks like this. This is the work we did without using the Helvetica. It's just two examples. And our idea was actually to fill this whole lecture only with examples like this, not using the Helvetica at all. But we thought it was a bit of a bad joke, a bit sinister, and therefore we decided also to talk about our relationship towards this typeface, because actually it's quite interesting as it changed a lot throughout the years. I mean,
our relationship with Helvetica, yeah, absolutely. I think to describe it in a very simple way, when we were younger, we just started out, we considered Helvetica to be a sort of neutral, objective typeface, and that was the reason why we used it. And when we grew older, and I mean, right at the moment we're sitting here, we realize that Helvetica is not neutral at all. And that it is in fact a typeface that is loaded with sort of ideas, ideologies, politics, emotions. And this is exactly the reason why we like it now. So that is more or less the whole narrative of this lecture that we're going to do now. The whole idea that that we changed our views about Helvetica. And, well, to start at the beginning, this is one of the first things we decided as a group. This is from 1997. This is, when we look at it now, actually we photographed it just last week, especially for this lecture, and we thought, oh my God, it looks terrible. Because the stuff we do is much more clear-cut now, in a way. We're much, much stricter. But when we did this, this was already considered quite radical in 1997. It is a redesign of a Dutch glossy magazine called Boulevard, BOVD, BOVD. And it was actually our graduation project. We did it while we were still studying. And we were studying at the same time. All three of us were already designing stuff, flyers and things. And then we were approached by the publisher or by the editor if you wanted to design this magazine, and actually we never thought we were going to accept that invitation to design it, because we were just thinking more about our final graduation project. And then our teacher that said to us, well, maybe you can just do it as a graduation project, so which was also quite a big step then, to do an actual assignment as a graduation project. Nowadays you see that more and more often at the Rietveld Academy where we started. But then it was quite a sort of radical thing that it was an actual assignment that we did, and that this was also our graduation project. So this was in 97, and we used Helvetica. I mean, the reason why we used it was very pragmatic, because it was the largest family in a way. It has the biggest amount of weights and variations. And we thought that was very handy, because then we could use all these different variations in the magazine. Nowadays we sort of try to limit the weights and the versions as much as possible, but then we thought it was quite handy, so we used the condensed, extended, light, medium, bold, Roman. We used all these different variations. This is, for example, condensed. And a very sort of concrete and pragmatic way of using it. And we were, when we used this, not yet aware of the conceptual and historical dimensions of the typeface. Not yet. That was later.
A funny anecdote was that it was also the first time that we had to deal with critics. We were just working really hard in this basement of this magazine, trying to finish it. Actually, we worked in during the nighttime because during the daytime, the people upstairs, the writers and the editors, they were arguing all the time. So what we did was we started work when they finished working. Then we worked all night until the next morning.
Because we
and
all
then
the
we
time
put it on the table and we
hear their arguing upstairs.
Yeah. And then we went to bed, waiting for the for their commentary. But their commentary was quite harsh because they said that the magazine didn't fit the advertisements anymore. And that was actually the reason why we start, when we decided to stop designing magazines whatsoever, because we could not imagine designing the backsides of advertisements all the time. So it was quite an early learning process, I think. And also the critics were directly on top of us while we were just working really hard on this graduation project, trying to do our best, and we were very tired and very anxious. And then we were completely slaughtered because they hated it and they said it was, I don't know, it resembled medicine packaging and was quite bizarre.
It was, I mean, really in the national newspapers, there were all these different critiques of the BOVD and, yeah, like Marieke said, it was quite harsh. Although a couple of years later, they all got weekly style magazines with it, and it all looked like this in a way. So it was also quite a sort of typical of that time, because a lot of those magazines were designed at that time still in a very sort of layered, more David Carson-like way, and then we suddenly scraped it all clear and stripped it all clean, and so it was quite a shock to some people. Although when you look at it now, it looks totally
boring
and normal. But anyway, like we said, when we did this, it was still a very pragmatic way of using it, and we didn't really think yet of the more conceptual and historical dimensions of it that came later.
Well, this is just 1 year later in 1998. This is a letterhead we designed for a group of four architects, Giljam, Sillem, Plezier, and Jacobs. They were four architects that shared the same studio space, but weren't necessarily one company. They worked together in different configurations, which changed per project. So they wanted graphic identity that expressed that feeling of a group that is linked in different ways. And what we came up with was this letterhead, which is made up of one A4, and every architect got its own letterhead on the same sheet of paper. So what you see here is the same sheet of paper tilted 180 degrees, and then this is the back side, also the top and the bottom side. And by writing in a certain direction, you could see who sent you this letter. So the name on top would always be the one who sent the letter. And we also made the rest of the graphic identity. This is a card.
A postcard.
Also back and front and business card. And this, with this project, we started to think about using the Helvetica in a different way. It was a period when we became more and more interested in two different themes. Themes that still continue to play a big part in our work. Up to this very day. And those two themes are materiality and self-referentiality. So design as an object and design that refers to design itself. And by emphasizing the four different sides of this sheet of paper, so the front and the back and the bottom of the same sheet, we wanted to emphasize the physical dimensions of the sheet. So for example, with this A4, we want to emphasize that it was an object that you could hold and that it had a physical presence, and that was something that you could turn and fold, and something that you could really hold in your hands. And by emphasizing its material dimension, we wanted to let this piece of paper refer to itself. We wanted to create an A4 that would refer to its own role as an A4. And for us, we chose Helvetica for this project because by this time we were well aware that Helvetica was an incredibly dominant and iconic typeface. And in fact, it is so iconic that it can almost be seen as a signifier for the medium of graphic design. And this is why we used Helvetica in this project. And the yellow field that you see, we chose that in order to have a placeholder for the text. So the actual letterhead and the text that would make up the letter would be would each get their own space. And the yellow color refers, of course, to post-it notes that we also made for them.
It's a sort of inviting color to write on, in a way. It immediately makes you start writing. So actually, we still, because we always keep copies of stuff in our studio as an archive, but sometimes when we don't have yellow notes, we use our own archive.
Yeah, we
copies
still have
of this.
Of them,
we still have a lot of pieces of them. So,
and then we go fast forward to 3 years to 2001, and this is another example where we used Helvetica in quite an iconic way. We designed this shirt in for, I don't know, graphic. What was the name?
2K by Gingham. It was a Japanese
2K by Gingham.
2001. Yeah, and I completely lost track now. I don't know.
Well, in a way, this is also about a sort of archetypical thing or iconic thing. We wanted to design a sort of archetypical band t-shirt. Also, in a way, a shirt referring to a band shirt, which also got this sort of self-referentiality in it. And in this case, we thought, okay, we're going to make a sort of archetypical band shirt by taking the most archetypical band and stripping it down to its essence, four names. Just a list of four names, actually. Okay. Well, when we put those four names on top of each other or underneath each other, we noticed that it sort of clicked in a way, the sort of iconic value of those names and the iconic value of those words. And in a way, it just had it fitted really well together. And that is also when we wrote that sentence. I mean, a year later, the book came out, the Helvetica Homage to a Typeface. And they asked us if we had stuff that we wanted to put in there, and we sent in this shirt. And they also asked us to write a caption for it. And we wrote something like, Helvetica is a Beatles of typefaces, just as the Beatles is the Helvetica of pop music. I think that was also in the movie, or maybe it was in the extras or something.
But you never
watch
the extras.
I never watch the extras. It's a terror. The movie is quite horrific to look at when you're in it, in a way. You see yourself on the big screen. It is terrible, in a way. But anyway, this is in a way a completely different way of using it as we did it in the beginning. Because in the beginning we, of course, did it because it was so neutral. And here we were well aware of the sort of iconic and sort of archetypical value of the typeface and what the typeface meant to a lot of people. So it is in a way the exact opposite of using it as how we began. But still, we convinced ourselves that the way that we use it was quite sort of conceptual. I mean, it still had a sort of distance, a sort of intellectual distance. We kept a sort of intellectual distance from the typeface. We thought, well, this is purely a sort of conceptual thing, but there's no emotion involved. Well, in fact, in the following years, we started to notice something quite strange, and it was that more and more we started to realize that our attachment to the typeface was in fact quite emotional and had a lot to do with the culture in which we were shaped and the sort of surroundings in which we grew up. And this brings us to the following subject. So yeah, we discovered that underneath our more distant approach to Helvetica, there was something else, and that it was something that was in fact in our blood. And well, the fact is that we grew up in the 70s in cities like Rotterdam and Amsterdam. I think this is something that is definitely in the movie. We were both born in Rotterdam. Rick was born in Amsterdam. Quite sort of big cities with visual landscapes that were dominated by the graphic language of people such as Wim Crowell, studios such as Total Design. And as kids, everything around us was designed by these kind of people and these kind of studios in this sort of language of late modernism. The school books, the stamps, the telephone books. And as a consequence, we have been shaped by this graphic language of late modernism. So we sort of feel it as our mother tongue in a way, almost like a sort of folk thing, a sort of cultural heritage. And as such, it is deeply embedded in our minds. So in a way, we feel it is almost our right, or maybe our responsibility, to take it in order to tell our own story with it. So shown here is Crowell himself, standing in a typographic environment consisting of long strips of printed paper. We made these images in 2007 for a retrospective in a French gallery called Anatome. We created these photographs together with a photographer we work with quite often called Johannes Schwartz. And these images were used on the invitation that we designed in the catalog. And these images have a lot to do with how we now think about modernism and graphic design and Helvetica. And well, it's maybe sort of pompous to quote Karl Marx now, but we once read a quote by Marx which really made an impact on us. And he wrote that if humans are shaped by their surroundings, then these surroundings have to be made human. And this is something that really made an impact on us, and we really believe in this, the idea that as a human being you're shaped by your environment, and then in return you have to shape this environment yourself. And in our specific case, this means that we have been shaped by this sort of graphic language of modernism, of late modernism, and that we now feel it is sort of our turn to shape that language ourselves. And for us, Helvetica sort of encapsulates, sort of symbolizes this whole process of shaping and being shaped. It's sort of, it's also a sort of signifier of that process. So this was sort of the whole narrative of the lecture, in the sense that, when we started out, we saw Helvetica as a neutral typeface. Then we became more interested in a sort of iconic, archetypical side of it. And we use it more in a conceptual way. And now we are at a point that we can see that our relationship with it is quite personal. And that this is also something that we don't really have to be ashamed of, that it is part of our roots and part of our upbringing. So this would in a way conclude the lecture, but we thought as some kind of encore, we could discuss some other stuff that we made for this movie, for the Helvetica movie. First of all, the poster.
Well, this is the official film poster. Although the film is from 2007, or was released in 2007, we were asked to design this poster in 2006. And the whole poster revolves around the double meaning of the phrase "meet the cast." That's on top there. Well, the word cast, of course, refers to both a group of letters and a group of actors at the same time. And we always really like the classic movie posters that introduce the cast in words. This is an example. This is Benjamin. He's a little uncertain about his future. Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate. Or judge, jury, and executioner, Charles Bronson in Death Wish, etc., etc. And we wanted to create kind of a classic movie poster that also introduces the cast in this dry way.
And secondly, there was a print we designed in 2006 for Gary Hestwit as a so-called fundraiser, as is this poster. And Gary Hestwit, he asked us and some other designers, Norm Bilt and David Carson, to design posters. And he letterpressed them as limited edition prints. And they were sold to raise money for the film. So for this poster, we used a text of Trotsky, the ABC of materialist dialectics. And we turned this text into a letterproof. But we missed one of the letters, I think.
Or two letters, actually. Yeah.
That's bizarre.
It is really bizarre, and nobody saw it.
You can find out yourself which letters are missing. It's the R.
They just fell off the page in a way, but it's in a lowercase thing. But you know, we made it, and then we sent it to Gary, and he approved it, and then he sent it to the printer. So a lot of people saw it, but at a certain point, you don't really read the alphabet, you just see the idea of the alphabet.
Yeah, that's and the alphabet. Yeah.
It's only afterwards that people suddenly realize, oh my God, there are actually letters missing. And we could have solved it so easily, because right behind the zero, we could put the A, the lowercase A, and then there would be space for the other letters. So it is, which are missing? Only the R? No, I think there were more. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. G is gone?
And R.
G and R is gone. It's terrible.
Well, so not really a letterproof. But we thought this text was quite interesting because Trotsky states that two things are never the same, so not even two letters. And we thought this view could very well be applied to Helvetica because, in our opinion, Helvetica is never the same. In every context, Helvetica means something different, even the kerning and the time frame and the context and subject and the designer and the material where it's printed on and so on. So, and then there's this third and last.
This is the packaging we designed for the Blu-ray limited edition version of the documentary. And it's actually a record sleeve, a 12-inch sort of gatefold double album. And the reason why we were immediately thinking about a record sleeve and Gary asked us to design a packaging for the Blu-ray was because we were very much thinking about this whole idea of formats. And Blu-ray was really the brand new format. And we thought, well, maybe it's interesting to package it in an old format in a way, almost to remind people that every new format will once be an old format, some kind of memento mori, I guess. So we thought it's nice to connect the Blu-ray disc with a very old format, which is the record, the record disc. So we used on the front of the sleeve, actually it is the same alphabet as you see as on the film poster, but then completely twisted like a record. It's sort of divided in tracks and spinning grooves. In a way. So it's like grooves in a way. And it was quite a sort of lush packaging. It existed out of the cardboard sleeve, and then there was an insert and a big poster, and then you open it. This is the inside of the
sleeve.
This is the outside of the sleeve. This is like an insert that you pull out, and then in the inside of this is the actual CD, like this.
DVD.
The Blu-ray, actually. Yeah. That is the word. It was limited, so we made a little space where Gary could put his
signature
autograph. Yeah. This is the poster. Actually, there were more reasons why we thought this record sleeve would be quite interesting. The first time we met Gary, I think this was already in 2005, he came in our studio and he was telling us about his idea of making a movie about Helvetica. And he said, yeah, it will be like a rock documentary, but then about a typeface. And this is also why we sort of thought that the record sleeve would make sense. And also Gary has a background, Gary Huswit, the director of the movie. He has a background in record labels. He used to work for a sort of legendary Californian punk label called SST. Black Flag was on that and stuff like that. So the first time when we met him, we were talking about that. And we thought, okay, it's funny because now he has a sort of film label going on. But to make him again working for a record label, that he suddenly has his stacks of records that he has to sell.
It was also the only possibility for us to design a record because living in a country that
doesn't really have a music industry.
So in doesn't a way give us much yeah. chance to actually design a record cover. So for us, it was also sort of tempting.
We always try to turn everything into a record sleeve. That is the only way how we can design record sleeves.